You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Dude. Trying to hold the door open for a guy that's injured, man. It's a rough morning. Man, get all those sticky notes out, sticky hands out, and people start hurting you. And you end up going to the ER, and then you get tripped by really obnoxious people. See if I'm coming to Prime Group. Yeah, it's pretty rough. You know, being a pastor and all. All right. Now. Yeah, we need to come. Feel free to get a picture of me here, you know, for Instagram. By the way, we have an Instagram page, if you did not know that. It's MC3Church. No, it's Instagram.com/MC3Church. And there you can get a fun little taste of some of the extra things that happened during the point. But as you can see, I had a rough morning. Actually, this is more representative of a span of like a year. I can't remember the exact date. I remember my freshman year was part of it, and I think it was my freshman into my sophomore year of high school. And I remember, you know, you had one of those little like get to know me quizzes and stuff, and you know, have you ever broken a bone kind of a deal? And I remember in like seventh grade, like, no, I'm perfect, I've never broken anything. And then I had this rough spot, and I guess it was probably like related to puberty, and you know, how you get all awkward. Although I didn't really hit puberty until like last week. That's not true. You guys have seen me. But seriously, it was probably like 12th grade. So maybe that wasn't the issue, but. But anyway, I had this span where I just had a lot of injuries, and they are all kind of represented here. Let's see, what did I do first? I even wrote it down here, if you'll give me a moment to open so I can get this right. I want to be accurate, because everything I say is 100% accurate. Oh, my finger. Yeah, okay. So I actually fractured the knuckle on this finger playing volleyball, and it was church volleyball, and I have to confess something. I hate church volleyball. And not because I broke a finger, but because I tend to be competitive, and I actually played volleyball in college, and I was a coach, a high school volleyball coach when I was in Dallas. And today we're talking about community and loving people and caring about people and things like that. But one of the things that is so frustrating in church volleyball is the, oh, sure, one more won't matter. For competitive volleyball players, that's like the worst thing to say ever. I'm like, yeah, because Jesus wants me to, but I don't want to. But anyway, yeah, so there was a really high ball, and I was being cool or something, and the ball came right down onto my middle finger and fractured my knuckle. And so I had to wear this thing around for a while. And then what else was next? Oh, my toe. I don't know if you can see, but my toes are taped together here. I actually that year was swimming in a like some kind of party, some pool party. And it was an in-ground pool. And I remember I was showing people how quickly I could swim up from the bottom of the pool. And I went to the bottom, was like, go, you know, and kicked off of the bottom of the pool and literally kicked the bottom of the pool and broke my toe. Swimming. So that was a rough time. You know, those are pretty easy taping together. And then my ankle, I sprained my ankle that year as well. Riding, do you remember the old school, like riding on the handlebars of banana bike, you know, that had the, just shake your head yes and be like, no, I don't, yeah, I know what you're talking about because you're not old. Just, that'll make me feel better. My self-esteem, but I was riding on the handlebars of this, like, you know, they had the handlebars, the ape hangers kind of thing going on, and I sat in the middle of it, and my foot got stuck in the wheel and wrenched around, and it hurt, and I tried to avoid it for a while, and then I was like, this is still hurting. A couple days later, I went to the doctor. Sure enough, I had sprained it, and then my freshman year, I I broke my elbow. And this was rough. Sometime that year there was a pickup league football game, not league, but a pickup football game in our neighborhood. And I went to Brad's house. Everybody played because Brad, right across the street, he had like this open lot in our little development there. And you know, it was fun playing. And I was a freshman. And I remember I was tackled by a fourth grader who was bigger than me. But to my defense, and that word got out, fourth grader, tackled by a fourth grader. But I was tackled, there was a sidewalk there, and I was tackled onto the sidewalk, and his weight and my weight both fell onto my elbow on the sidewalk. And it was rough because it was like, there were all these multiple little fractures in there. And I suppose as I get older, because I'm not old, duh, to clarify. As I get older, there might be issues with that. But I had to wear this really weird, like, splint. It was plaster back then. They didn't have fiberglass. And I had this plaster splint thing that went up around my shoulder, and it got all wrapped in place. And I remember specifically being in Mrs. Land's social studies class, freshman social studies. And it was my right arm, and I'm a right-handed person. Yeah, that's my right arm. I got dressed quickly in the back there. And I couldn't write with my right hand. And so you know what I did? Listen to this. If you are under the age of 25 or so, in that range and down, I blew my teacher away. And I remember this because she came up front and she said, "You guys need to be like Sean Fitch. Look what Sean Fitch has done." And literally every time I had class, went to her class, she would say this: "Sean Fitch impresses me again." Because you know what I did? I did my homework on a computer. A computer, yes. I actually did work on a computer. And it blew everybody away because they're like, "What is this computer thing you speak of?" And I'm like, "My dad has one of them." And it's really cool because he had a buddy that worked at Radio Shack. And we had a Tandy. And it had the DOS boot. It didn't even have Windows yet. Windows didn't exist at the time. And I used BASIC, you know, and wrote my homework. And then when it was time to print it out, you know, it didn't go like, or even, it went. And I did that for about an hour. And then I had the three sentences that I wrote. and then, of course, you weren't even done then. You couldn't just take the paper and go. What did you have to do next? Rip the sides off. Right. Yep. You had to rip the end. And then, of course, inevitably, after that hour of printing, you're like, "Okay, got this side." And it ripped the actual paper. You start all over again. But, yeah, I just so impressed Mrs. Land because I did my homework on computer. But I wanted you to know something about each of these injuries. You know, I wasn't necessarily, I'm a tough it out kind of guy. It doesn't matter. And at the same time, I wasn't like, "Oh, my elbow hurts." But I had to go to the doctor for each of these injuries. And I had to go to the doctor because this part, the various parts of me were injured. And they were preventing me from being who I am. Take it or leave it. You know, whatever you get stuck with, but they were keeping me from being who I am. And I remember my elbow thing, I mean, it wasn't like a straight break. Because of how complicated it was in there, it just hurt, and I couldn't move things. And, of course, my right hand, you know, I couldn't do things that I'm normally accustomed to doing with my right hand. And, of course, I couldn't play sports with this. And when I had the sprained ankle, I had to walk around with crutches. I couldn't move as well as I wanted to, couldn't play, couldn't be involved in all the fun things that you're involved in as a kid. And each time, even though it was just a small part of me, even though it was just a piece of me, when that part hurt, all of me felt it. And when I went to the doctor for each of these injuries, and they, you know, they showed me how to put the ACE bandage on. I don't think they use them anymore, do they? Maybe they're air cast now. But you know, showed me how to do that. It made it better because it immobilized that part until that part could heal. And then all of a sudden, all of me was better when that part was better. And so when that part of me hurt, all of me hurt. And when that part felt better, all of me felt better. And this is exactly... I really need to take this off before I do something offensive. I keep trying to point. Okay. So this is just like the church, who we are supposed to be as the church. And we've been doing this series, of course, we're only on the second week, but looking at what if church was more? What if it's more than what we've made it? And last week we looked at this, and we looked at the church in Laodicea and how Jesus said that this church was so awful because they weren't hot or cold. They weren't passionate about anything. They were just sitting on the fence, and they were lukewarm and weren't really committed to who they were, to what they were doing. And Jesus said, you know, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. And this idea of maybe there's a hunger inside of us going, what if church was more? And again, last week we looked at it. If you can listen to the point online at mc3church.org. And honestly, if you weren't here last week, I want to strongly encourage you to do that. Because I feel like this series is a kind of a coming back to the foundation. 5 years later, what is it that we are about? Why are we about what we're about? And as you'll see each week, it's really not about who we are at all, but about who Jesus is. So anyway, if you weren't here, I encourage you to listen to it, because it's really, I think it's important to get us rethinking and refocusing on who God has called us to be and the most important things at church. And this week, I want to look at this idea of relationships and our relationships with one another. And the point that I want us to consider is, what if relationships were more? What if relationships were more than just saying hi? Because I think sometimes, and I'm sweating now, sorry. I think we get caught up into this, you know, like, what are relationships? Especially in church. And I'm not talking about, you know, your spouse, your kids. Hopefully your relationships with them are more than just saying hi. But you know, just kind of the people that you're around right now, the people in your prime group, the people that you connect with, is your relationship at a level where you're like, hi, and that's it? And maybe you wonder, like, this doesn't seem like what Jesus was talking about. It seems like it should be more. Like, is that really what it's all about? And we have a first impressions team, and they do a lot of great stuff. They you know, security and all sorts of things you don't even have a clue that they're doing while they're doing it. But they're to open doors in there. But I want you to know, we don't have greeters. And that's on purpose. Because in some churches they have greeters, and that's their call, that's fine. But greeters sort of have this idea of, it's their job to say hi, and I don't have to do anything then. And we really have discouraged the idea. Like, we want MC3 church to be about relationships, and hi being the starting point of that, but going into something much deeper. And I think the problem is, if we were truly what Jesus has called us to be, and I'm not saying we're not, I'm just saying, and that's what the whole point of this series is, I'm saying, let's refocus here 5 years later, since we started, and say, are we still doing what we're supposed to be doing? So, anyway, not that we're not this way, but the church is supposed to be something where if a part hurts, then everybody hurts. And if a part rejoices, then everybody rejoices. And I understand, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit, and why we have prime groups, is that, you know, you're not going to know everything about everybody. That's absolutely impossible, at least on any kind of a deep level. But there are certain pockets of people, there are groups of people in the church that you should know and that they should know you. And we've kind of gotten into this mindset sometimes where it's just a matter of saying hi, and if that's as deep as we go, that person could be broken. And if a person that you are saying hi to is broken, we should feel the brokenness in the rest of us. And if a person is going through a success and going through a great time or excited about something or God has done something amazing in their lives, then we should be like, yes, that is great. That is something to celebrate. And again, it's not that you need to know everything about everybody at all the time, but just looking and saying, we need to be more like our own physical bodies, which is what we're called, the body of Christ. And we need to make our relationships more than what they are right now, than what they might ease into. And again, as we grow, as this church grows, which God is doing amazing things and amazing stories, and next month we're going to hear about those stories. I'm so excited about this 5-year anniversary Faithful series. But, you know, as we grow, it's easier for you to disappear. It's easier for you to sit and not be connected to anyone. Or maybe you're connected by saying, oh, I said hi to them, or I know their name. But if we are truly the church that Jesus has called us to be, it needs to be much deeper than that. So I want to look at this passage, and the lights are going to come on if you have your paper Bible. We're going to be, you can go to YouVersion. We're going to be in Acts chapter 12. And it's a long passage, and then I'm going to pull one little part of it out. But this is probably different, perhaps, than you have, you know, if you, when you look at this passage, you're like, oh, I know what he's going to talk about. But I want to just show you something that's really wild here in Acts chapter 12. So the lights are coming on in the room, and Acts 12, it'll also be on the screen. And you know, stick with me as I read through it, and then we'll kind of come back and chew on it a little bit. And this is Acts 12. By the way, like I said last week, we're looking at, you know, what is the early church all about? If the church was what Jesus kind of created, not kind of, did create, let's look back at the early church and how did they do it? And so each week, this series, we're going to look at different churches, different early churches, and kind of the way they started and some of the things they dealt with. And so this one is in Acts chapter 12. And it says, it was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread, just in case you were wondering. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Give you some time to chew on the math. Took me a while. Herod intended to bring him, and we're talking about Peter now, Herod intended to bring Peter out for public trial after the Passover. Then, so Peter was kept in prison. But the church was earnestly praying to God for him. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. "Quick, get up," he said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and sandals," and Peter did so. "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison, but he had no idea what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. They passed the first and second guards and came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of the street, of one street, suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I know without a doubt that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen." When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed, she ran back without opening the door and exclaimed, "Peter's at the door!" "You're out of your mind," they told her. When she kept insisting that it was so, they said, "It must be his angel." But Peter kept on knocking, and when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Peter motioned with his hands for them to be quiet and described how the Lord had brought him out of prison. So again, maybe this is a passage you have heard before if you've grown up in the church. I just want to clarify that this is one of three clear breakouts of prison, if you will. There was actually an earlier one where the apostles were put in prison. The doors were open overnight and they were out preaching on the streets the next day. And then there's another one with Paul and Silas. And we'll look actually into that one next week. Paul and Silas, when they were released from prison. But kind of here in the middle of those two, you've got this moment with Peter. And I want to talk about this idea of when one part hurts. And what does it mean to be the church? What does it mean to be part of the church? And I am not talking about MC3, Mifflin County Community Church Incorporated, circa 2011, May, Lewistown, PA, I don't know all of our details, EIN number, blah, blah, blah. I'm not talking about that. I mean the church, us as followers of Jesus, as the body of Christ. what is it that makes us the church? And again, church isn't Sunday morning. This is not church. What you're doing here is worship. And that's part of it, but it's so much bigger than that, as we looked into last week. And so I want you to understand that church is the body, the people. If we are followers of Jesus, then we are the church. If you are a follower of Jesus, then you are the church. It's not the building, it's the people. So, just to clarify that. And so I want to look at this idea that what does it mean to really be this connected to one another? What does it really mean to have relationships that are that deep? That when your toe is broken, you can't walk until it is healed. Your whole body is damaged until that part is fixed. And when that part is healed, you celebrate. And when you eat something yummy, your whole body goes, that's good. And when you eat something not so good, your body goes, I'm getting this out. We'll be talking about Mexico in a couple of weeks. Anyway, when one part hurts, I want to give you just kind of a little bit of a background here, just to set up. In Acts chapter 12, verses 1 to 7, or the beginning part of it here. So just to clarify some things that happened to set the stage for what's going to, the big deal of this church here. So King Herod, this is not the same Herod that that killed the babies back in the, you know, beginning of the Bible. That was way earlier. In the Gospels. And when he was concerned about the baby being born in Bethlehem, this is not the same Herod. Just so you know, that was Herod the Great. This is a grandson, if I did my math correctly, a grandson of that Herod. So he arrested some that belonged to the church. So it was actually a time of peace right up until this moment. And he arrested some that belonged to the church. And the word for church, the Greek word here, is ekklesia. And the Greek word ekklesia means a gathering, a group, a congregation, an assembly of people. And so he arrested some that belonged to the ekklesia, to the church, intending to persecute them. And I want to clarify something here. The Greek word here for persecute is kakou. Sounds like a bird. Kakou! Kakou! That's not what that means. It actually, the word literally means to intend to injure or harm. So I need you to understand that this is a big deal, because Herod wasn't just like, well, I'm going to say mean things to them and wag my finger, or I'm going to fine them. I'm going to do something that makes them feel bad. No, he was arresting these people with full intent to hurt them, to injure them, to kill them. And so he found this guy, James, the brother of John. By the way, is not James the brother of Jesus. Different James. This is not the James that wrote the epistle of James, the letter of James that James wrote. That was a different James. So James, the brother of John, was put to death with the sword. And it says the Jews were happy about this, because the Jews, again, the church started, Jesus was Jewish. The church started from this Jewish faith that's all the Old Testament. But God says, I'm making a new covenant. I'm doing something new now. And the Jewish people, the traditional legalists, the Pharisees, they were like, oh, you're killing Christians? You're killing church people? I'm in. They liked it. And King Herod, of course, is the king of the Jews in terms of the legal responsibility, the governmental authority he had. And so the people that he was in charge of liked what he was doing. So he says, oh, I'm all about this. So he says, I'm gonna amp it up. I'm gonna move it up one level. And so he decided to seize Peter, because Peter, dude, he was in from the beginning. He was the man at Pentecost. The one that stood up when all of a sudden these people started speaking the individual languages of the people around them, and says, this is God doing something. And so he says, I'm going to get Peter. And this happened during the Festival of Unleavened Bread. It was during the Passover, which is about, you know, the same festival where Jesus was crucified, not the same time. Anyway, after arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. So Herod remembers what happened a few chapters earlier. He didn't have chapters then, but a few chapters earlier in Acts, when these guys were speaking in the public square and were arrested and put in prison, and the next morning they were back out preaching in the public square. So Herod's like, I know what I'm going to do this time. I'm not going to let that happen, because those are probably bad soldiers. So I'm going to give them four squads of four soldiers. There are 16 soldiers guarding Peter around him in this prison. And it says that Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover, because he wanted to make a big deal about this. He wanted Peter to be the example, sort of like Jesus was as well. Let's bring him out public. What do you want to do? Let's kill Peter. Look what he's doing with this church thing. Let's get rid of him. And so that was Herod's plan. And so all this is happening. And the church, the body of believers, this small group, this collection of followers of Jesus that Peter is a part of, knew that this was going on. They knew that this was going on. And we see here then that when Peter was hurting, when one part was hurting, it affected everybody. And so the church was, there were some things about the church that we see here in just this one little verse that I think is just so powerful. First of all, the church was connected to others. They were connected to others. See, this issue with Peter wasn't just a random, like, oh, hey, did you guys hear? Peter got put in prison. Oh, that's a bummer. When did that happen? I think that was last week, I think. I don't know. I read it online. It was something that happened. Oh, okay, well, maybe we should do something. I don't know, maybe not. No, there's nothing like that. This wasn't a, hey, the word got out and everybody's like, ooh, this is, we need to be afraid. No, they knew that one of their own was put into prison. And I love this part of Acts chapter 12. It says, so Peter was kept in prison, but the church. And the structure of this sentence in the original language there really emphasizes that bad thing, but the church. Like, there's anticipation there. There's this uh-oh. There's this meanwhile. There's this almost, if you think about Jesus, 3 days later, the ground shook. I mean, there's this sense of like something powerful is happening here. What is happening here? What's happening is that the church felt one of their own hurting. Peter is in prison. Well, then it's time for us to act. It's time for us to step in. This wasn't an issue of, we're not quite there. It wasn't an issue of them going like, oh no, what do we do? Or we're scared, or we better start praying, or we better start doing some sort of, you know, movement so that we can stop this or start. No, this wasn't anything like this. This was part of who they were. That Peter was put in prison, so the church. Peter was put in prison, but the church. That concept, that structure, that design is so intentional, so connected, so powerful. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here when we talk about relationships. When you've got one of your own hurting, there was no hesitation. There was no discussion. There wasn't even an issue of, hey, we need to send this out on the internet to get this, spread the word, or we get the prayer chain going, or anything like that. This was, they knew because they were so connected. They were so connected to one another. They were so in each other's lives that as soon as Peter got hurt, the church. Or as soon as Peter got put in prison, the church. Right away, they responded. And understand, too, this wasn't just an issue of like, well, I guess the right thing to do is this. No, there's a feeling. There's a passion here. There's a lack of lukewarmness going on here. Where the church says, we need to respond. We need to be there. We need to. Peter is hurting. Peter's in trouble. Peter's struggling. Peter's got some problems. And says, but the church. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church. And I just want to throw this out. I think it's easy for us to be like, well, you know, if one of us got thrown into prison and, you know, we heard that they were going to be killed for following Jesus, then, yeah, we probably would do something. We'd probably pray. And we kind of look at this as like, well, this is an extraordinary thing. But I disagree. I think that this was who they were as the church. That as soon as something happened, they're responding. As soon as there was an issue, they're connected because they know that one of their own is hurting. That this isn't an extraordinary thing, but this was normal everyday life. Hey, Peter's in prison. All right, let's do something. And they, you know, there was just that instant. We are here. We are hurting together. We are with them because we are in each other's lives. It's not a matter of saying, hi, which one was Peter? Oh, he was the guy that used to sit in the section on the left by the back there. Remember he had kind of the weird looking hair and the robe. His robe was a little different. Oh, yeah, I remember him. He sits next to me every week. This wasn't anything like that. This was a depth of love and concern and connection, so that as soon as something happened with Peter, but the church. So they were connected to others. They were connected to Peter. And again, we see the Acts is full of stories like this, not just miraculous escapes from prison. But just there's a need and it was met. And we'll look again more at these things in the future. But the second thing that they do is that the church was compelled to action. They weren't sitting back and saying, yeah, one of us hurts. That's a bummer. Man, I hope it works out for Peter. It would really stink if he got killed. But it was way more than that. It was, Peter is in prison. One of us hurts. But the church, and what did the church do? The church was earnestly praying. Earnestly. The word means continuously, constantly, wholeheartedly. There we go. Wholeheartedly praying. That's a lot. Huh? Wholeheartedly praying. They were putting everything they had into it. They weren't on the fence about this. They were hot and cold. They were into it. They were giving everything. Because Peter, one of their own, was hurting. So the church stepped in and says, we know this, and so what are we going to do? We're going to act. And their action, they, for this particular case, they got together. And they said, you know, we could, and this is, they, I don't think they had this conversation. They could have. God said, we can get together, and maybe we can break him out of prison. He's like, I know a guy that's good with plastique. They didn't invent that yet. Oh, nitroglycerin?
Probably not.
I have an axe. Okay! You know, and like, we can bust them out of prison. No, that wasn't any. They said, what is the best weapon we've got in this situation? Let's pray about it. Let's come together. And it says they were earnestly praying, and as we already read earlier there, it says they gathered at this home of Mary. Because Peter's in trouble, guys. What are we going to do? Let's get together and pray. Right now, let's do something. They're compelled to act, and they had to act because one of theirs was hurting. And if your body is hurting, here's two responses. Doing nothing and doing something. And some of you are not very good at doing something. And it's not a good thing not to do something. And honestly, as I'm slightly aging, I'm realizing that doing something is a lot more important than doing nothing. Because when I was, you know, a young youth, whippersnapper, a youth. Did you just call him a youth? Anyway, see, I'm old. See, right there. reference to a movie from like 1989, 91. Anyway, lost train. Oh, when I was young, like, it didn't matter as much. But now that I'm getting older, these things matter. And so that's the issue. When part of you hurts, you need to do something about it so that you can fix it, because the rest of you needs to be in full function. It's good that way. And let's just even say it's good that way because you have responsibilities. You have people around you that need you and love you and care about you. And there are issues and things, and you are called to be a servant of Christ. And so maybe just if nothing more, you care for your body so that you can do what Jesus has called you to do. But the point is, you can do something or do nothing. And the church said, no, we're doing something. Peter's in prison. We need to do something. They were compelled to action. We're going to gather together and pray. Like, it was a, but the church was earnestly praying. This idea of being that connected, of that concerned about him. It wasn't an issue. And again, I understand, and we'll talk more about this actually in 2 weeks when we look at serving and the idea of giving of ourselves. But you know, it wasn't an issue of them waiting till it fit into their schedule. And I understand that's the reality of life too. But these guys said, we are so concerned, we're going to do something right away. And maybe not everybody was there praying. Maybe someone said, you know what, I can't get away. I've got to guard some guy in prison, but I will be praying while I'm staying here. You know, I don't know if it was him or not. But you know, the idea that this is what they were doing. This was their response. Their action was that we are so connected to this guy that a part of us is hurting and we're going to do something about it. So they were earnestly praying and they thought that's the best thing they can do, and they were absolutely right. So, then the third thing we saw here is that the church was connected to others, compelled to action. And finally, they were committed to Christ. And this is important, because we're talking about the importance of relationships, the importance of a word that I'll throw out here that you probably have never heard before, a word called community. And this idea of community and of relationships and of being connected, this isn't so that you have more friends. This isn't so that you can be considered, oh, they're a friendly person. Because if all of our relationships are simply about just being friends, so we can maybe sing a song together, then we've missed something. Because the true depth of our relationships has nothing to do with how charismatic, how winsome, how exciting, and great to be around you are. The depth of our relationships comes from Christ. And so not that you have to go into every relationship like, hi, I said hi, my name's Sean, have any hurts in your life? And let me tell you about Jesus. Like, it doesn't have to be like a boom, like, you can be a friend. I'm saying there's nothing wrong with being a friend. But if it's just at that level, we've missed so much of what matters. And Kendra and I were just reflecting on this the other night, looking at our marriage, and we've been married 99 and the year, so you subtract the year, so it's 2016. We've been married for 17 years, because you add a year to the year. There we go. I know what it was, okay? I just, the math. Anyway, but we're like, what is it? Why do we, you know, here we are 17 years later, and we're just so much in love. And she was just like, because of Jesus? Yeah. I mean, there's lots of winsome things about her character and plenty of things about me. But it's not about that. It's about Christ. It's about this deeper level, this thing. There's something that matters here. And that's exactly the issue with this church here. The church, they weren't just stuck to the friendship level. They're committed to Christ. They said, one of us is hurting, and so we're going to act. We know about it. We're going to act. And so what did they do? So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. They weren't just praying. They were praying to God because they knew that the root of their relationship, the root of their connection, the root of their community was founded in Jesus, was founded in God. And so when they said, we have something to do, what should we do? Let's pray to God for him. And that's what mattered. That was the depth of their relationships. And I think that's something for us to understand. That it's great to be friends. It's great to be a part of a group that of people that are like you. And that's, there's nothing wrong with hanging out with people that are like you. There's nothing wrong with that. We're all different. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. We're all different. And that's cool. God made us different. God made us unique. And there's certain people that, you know, we get along with, certain people we don't. Certain things we enjoy, certain things we don't. There's nothing wrong with that. But just make sure it's not a social club. That all the people you hang out with, like, yeah, we're so friendly together. And we joined this club because we all like to, I don't know, we went to Florida on vacation. They have those shuffleboard clubs, like, everywhere. And, you know, that club exists. There's nothing wrong with shuffleboard if you're a shuffleboarder or whatever you call them, shuffleboardy, shuffler. Anyway, but that club exists purely because of shuffleboarding. And there's nothing wrong with shuffleboarding. But if that is the extent of our relationship as a church, well, why do we exist? Oh, because we love to come and listen to cool music. Because I'm about breaking world records. Like, that's all neat and fun, and there's a reason we do that, and obviously we're doing it. It's not like we think it's wrong. But the level, the depth comes because of Jesus. And the relationships that we have with one another and the reasons we do what we do have to be founded in Jesus. And that's just it. The church said, we could have done something. We could have broken him out of prison. We really care. And we really like Peter. He's a swell guy. But they weren't just on that level. They said, they're praying to God, earnestly praying to God for him. Because a part of them was hurting. Because a part of them was in trouble. And so they were earnestly in prayer to God. And so that's this idea of what does it mean to be the church? What does it mean to be in real relationships? There's a depth there. There's a part that says, when you hurt, I hurt. Because I know you so well. Because I'm so connected. Because I am opening myself up to you. And you need to be opening yourself up to me. If people, you know, let me be straight about this. If you're going around like, nobody ever said anything to me. You know, lost my job last week. Nobody ever said anything to me. And getting angry about that, and you know, that's classic, like, middle school, right? Nobody ever said hi to me. Did you ever say hi to anybody else? No. It's their responsibility. Nobody talked to me about my job. I lost my job. Have you told anybody about this? Well, no. Like, that's the thing. This relationship, this being connected deeply, means you have to be vulnerable and open yourself up to other people, and they're going to be vulnerable in your life. And then when something bad happens, they're there for you. There was a situation that happened in the last couple of weeks, and there's a chance that someone will listen to this. So, back in my hometown, and it was just sad because. I'm going to be so vague here without making any sense. There was a situation that was just sad in the community, and it was a lot of work getting people to care about it. And it just reflecting back, looking at it from my standpoint, kind of out here, going like, that's so awful. And Kendra and I were talking about this, and I shared this with the elders at our meeting on Tuesday night about, you know, like at MC3, that wouldn't happen. If something bad like that happened, you have to fight people away from helping. And that's good. And we can't, we talked about last week about getting stuck in our history. We can't say, yeah, we used to do that. We need to keep evaluating it. But we need to be in these relationships where that can happen. We need to be vulnerable and opening up. And so that when someone hurts, we hurt. And when someone celebrates, we celebrate. And I love that. We share God moments. You're going to have a chance to do that in your prime groups this week. We do it in our elders meetings. We don't do it because we need to fill time. We do it because we're celebrating what God has done. And rarely are we celebrating what happened in our own lives. And there's some cool things that we share, and that's great. But a lot of times it's like, did you hear about what God did with them? And we celebrate that because it's about God. It's that level of relationship, that level of depth. And so the church, when one part hurts, everybody hurts. The church was connected to others. We need to be connected to others. We need to be in each other's lives, be vulnerable, be open, know what's going on. When you hurt, I hurt. When I hurt, you hurt. We are together. When I celebrate, you celebrate. When I have a need, we help each other. Like, that is what church is designed to be. Not sitting down on a Sunday morning in a row and saying hi to someone. That is not what it is. They were compelled to action. They saw a need. They did something about it. And, of course, the foundation was that they were committed to Christ. So the question I posed at the beginning, what if relationships were more than just saying hi? It comes back to this word that I just introduced to you for the very first time a few moments ago, called community. Community. The idea of being connected in community, in relationships with one another, being more in community. Now, we went over this whole process last week, and each week now for the rest of this series, I'm going to break down each part of it. And so last week, we did this whole process. It was on a card. If you need a card, let me know. I'm sure we have some extras. And if you don't know how to go through this process, I'm sure someone around you will be able to help you. And if they aren't, come and see me, and I will make sure that they know how to help you. But it comes from this passage. We said, as we start this church, you know, what if we do it the way the early church did, not get stuck up in, you know, hey, we're 2000 and, you know, at the time it was 2011 America. Yeah. And you know, is 2011 America the way we're supposed to model churches? What if we went back to the New Testament where the church first started and we looked at this passage in Acts chapter 2, 42 to 47. And again, I did all this last week, but I want to break down to the one part we highlighted in this as this description of the first church. The description of how the early church started, and it says in there that they were devoted to the fellowship and to breaking of bread and to prayer. They were in fellowship, relationship. That's what that word means. Koinonia is the Greek word, in case you care. It's this idea of being in each other's lives. It's not what, you know, I remember we used to have a fellowship hall at my church growing up, and we sometimes would have a Wednesday night fellowship time. And what that meant, all of those fellowship names meant food. That's what that meant. And that is great. You're allowed to have fellowship with food, but fellowship isn't food. It's way more than that. It's way more than that. And so these people were connected in fellowship, breaking of bread together into prayer. And then it says later, all the believers were together and had everything in common. They were sharing all of it. Life, good, bad, ugly stuff, things, money, needs, all of it. They were in common. It was together, connected, just like we looked there with the church and Peter. And then later it goes on and says, they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Again, this idea of being connected. And the word we've called that is community. As we look at this early church and say, what are the three things that they were focused on? We came up with these three things. C1 is community. And so there's that little chart there, and it'll come up on the screen there. C1, community. And for that, we said, let's build our ministries around these things that are priorities. So we've developed prime groups at MC3. They launched today. As Kara shared earlier, they start today. There's one today. There's a couple on Tuesday night. There's one on Thursday night. There's student prom on Tuesday and Thursday night. The reason these groups exist is because we need to be in community. We need to have deep relationships. And I hate to tell you this, but right now you are not in a deep relationship with the people sitting near you. At least not in this context. You might have a good relationship with the back of their head. You might know the weird, goofy sounds they make when they're sitting in silence. You know, you might know all those, but that's not relationship. That's not fellowship. That's not community. That's just, you know, saying hi, essentially. And so we've developed prime groups because we want everyone to be involved in a small group where you're developing relationships with other people, where you're going to share and be connected with other people. And that can't happen in a large group because, like I said earlier, we can't know everybody. You just don't. I mean, Jesus, the Son of God, had 12. He had 12 disciples. He developed a relationship. That was the model. That's how a rabbi-disciple relationship worked. The teacher would have one and a small group of people because they could get to know each other that way. And that's the idea. We want people to be in a small group each week. And the point is not just to eat. It's not like, oh, man, good thing I got prime group this week because I couldn't get dinner that night. I mean, that's all good. But it's so that you're in relationship. And if you say, yeah, I love my group because we played lots of fun games. But if it stops there, we've missed it because it's not just about the fun and the relationship. It's about the Christ, the connection through Christ, that next level. And that's what the discussion guides are about. Because in prime groups, you discuss the point. And we have a prime group leaders meeting right after this for leaders. Just a reminder, please be there. Because we are going to go over, we have a new discussion guide format to help you even better come back to this idea of the depth. If you just spend all your time in fun and prayer requests, which is not wrong, but we don't get into this level of what is Christ doing in our lives, then we've missed it. And so that's why we have prime groups, because we need to be in community. And so I want to share something here. In the New Testament, if you really have some time on your hands and you want to use a paper Bible, you can cheat with YouVersion because you can just search one another, but don't do it right now. But if you look in a paper Bible and find all the spots where the New Testament talks about one another, about relationship, about community, all the same concept, there are 59 instances of the phrase one another that are used in the New Testament. Because Jesus, because God, through the writers of Paul and Peter and James and John, wanted us to be in community together. We needed to be connected. And so I kind of summarized some of these. I missed some. I'll just be straight up. One of the big ones I missed was greet one another with a holy kiss. That happens like 5 times. And we can deal maybe with a whole series on interpreting what the heck that means in our era. But so I didn't have that one in my little list here. But this doesn't cover all of them. But these are some summaries of the main categories. Community means these things, these one another's, these things that we are supposed to do as the church. The first thing, community means that we accept together. That together, we accept one another. And that means if you're different than me, if you're a follower of Jesus, and frankly, if you're not, I accept you as a follower of Jesus. Because your smell might be different than my smell, but we all smell. And whatever you think is great, and I think is great, and if they're different, exactly. I love Eric. Even though he's a Dallas Cowboys fan. And like the list of sins in Galatians, the acts of the sinful nature are obvious. Cowboys fan is on that list. It's in the Greek. It's in the Greek. But I still accept Eric. But anyway, we accept together. We accept one another. And that's what Romans 15:7 says. Accept one another. Boom. By the way, you want to add a little bit of a level to this? Just as Christ has accepted you. In order to bring praise to God. So we are supposed to accept one another. That means we're in connection. We're in relationship with people where we say, you know what? It doesn't matter. I accept you. You as a person, as a follower of Jesus, as a person created in the image of God. The second thing is that, and we're going to fly through these. Community means we teach together. And Colossians 3:16 says, somewhere here, let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. Together we can teach one another. And there's a reason that prime groups exist too, with a discussion guide, and why it's called a discussion guide and not a teaching guide. Because, I mean, I've got a master's degree in Christian education. I've got a bachelor's degree in Bible. And that doesn't mean that I know everything. And frankly, that doesn't mean I know much of anything. And the idea of discussion is that we can share in a group. And you know what? You who may have been following Jesus for a week may have an insight that I need to hear and learn. And so we can teach one another. That is what we're supposed to be as the body of Christ, as the church, to be teaching together. The third thing is that we need to respect together. And this is a powerful thing, too. This is something that the world, and we're going to talk about this in November, in our series in November. But this idea of being respecting other people and not being selfish in the center of attention, because the world is all about me, 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 me. Philippians 2:3 says this: don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. And so when we're together as a church, we can respect one another and say, you know what, I'm gonna place myself beneath you. Even though according to the world standards, maybe I'm higher than you. Maybe I'm better than you. No. We are here to respect together. And say, I'm going to treat you as a wonderful, amazing person. I'm going to humble myself and be your servant. And that's what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be serving. Oh, we'll get to that in a little bit. Right now, actually. The next thing is then to serve together. So we are called to serve each other. 1 Peter 4:10. And this is what I was saying earlier about people being different. Peter says, God has given each of you a gift from His great, great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. You have been, if you are a follower of Jesus, the Holy Spirit, God has given you a gift or more to use to serve each other. And if you're not doing it, if you're not using it, you are letting me down. And I don't mean as your pastor, but I mean as a brother who needs what you have to offer. And I'm not talking about serving in the church on a ministry team. That's important. I'm just saying, in this idea of one another, in this idea of community, we all have something to bring to the table, and we're different, we're diverse, we're unique, and that's great. That's the way God created us. And because we're so different and unique, that's why we have all these different parts of my body, and I can't go like, you know what? I don't really need my ankle. I'm good without that. No, I need that part. It doesn't do the same thing that my stomach does, but I need them all. Because they work together, and that's the whole point. We need to serve together. We're going to do a series in December called Gifts, and looking at the spiritual gifts that God has given us, the gifts that we have received as followers of Jesus. So going on, there's 8 of these, by the way, and you'll have a chance to chew on them in your prime group this week. The fifth thing is we hurt together. We hurt together. When someone hurts, kind of going to the same idea we were talking about with Peter, that we hurt together. Galatians 6:2. Says to bear, carry each other's burdens. Carry one another's burdens. And this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. We are there to hurt with each other. And so if you find yourself in a corner by yourself, metaphorically or literally, and you're hurting, plug in. Be vulnerable. And you know what's crazy about this? Is that you will find that there are so many people that have gone through the same thing. I remember that when we had our miscarriage. Sharing that and finding out all these people, this is years ago, don't freak out. Before Cara was born, when we had our miscarriage, and all these people, including like our own relatives, like, oh, that happened to me. And you find all of a sudden that we've got people that can go through things together. So we need to carry each other's burdens. We hurt together. We forgive together. Unlike the world that says, you did something wrong to me, and I'm going to hold it against you for forever. We can actually forgive one another. That's what God has called us to be as the church, as followers of His. In 1 Thessalonians, there we go, chapter 5. So encourage each other. Or, what the heck? That is Colossians 3. All right, I'm going to follow the screen because mine's wrong. Okay, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. You've been forgiven. We need to forgive one another. And that's something unique that doesn't exist in the world. It doesn't exist out there. And the next thing is, what is the next thing? Since I'm not having a good time here. Encourage together. We need to encourage each other. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, so encourage each other and build each other up. Just as you're already doing. If we're together and we know what's going on in each other's lives, we can say, hey, you did a great job with that. And I think it's so sad, and I'm soapboxing a little bit here, but it's so sad that, you know, that almost feels awkward. That if I say you did a good job, most likely your first response to that, maybe you don't say it, but your first response is, why is he saying that to me? What does he want? Or what did I do wrong? It's not usually like, hey, this is great. Thank you. When we're encouraging other people, like, it feels weird, but this is what we're supposed to be doing. Hey, you did a great job with that. Well done. I'm proud of you. Encourage each other. And then the last thing, which is definitely the summary of all of this, is to love together. We are called to love one another. John 13, Jesus says, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples, just in case you forgot, if you love one another. And all this comes into this idea of love and to truly caring about the other person and to be watching out for each other. That's what relationships are. That's what community is. And that's what prime groups are designed to be. And understand this, too. We have created the seasons, the cycles, in each year, three times a year. And that's kind of it's on purpose for a lot of reasons. But I want to share this with you just to get rid of the guilt. to get rid of the guilt that Kara added on there just to have fun there. But if you're not clicking with your group or you don't feel like you can truly be vulnerable, it's okay to find a group where you can, because that's important. It's important to have that relationship, that connection. And nobody's going to judge you. We're going to accept you and respect you and love you, because that's so important to be able to be at that moment to share and do that. So here's these eight things real quick. Community means we accept together, teach together, respect together, serve together, hurt together, forgive together, encourage together, and love together. If you summarize approximately like 50 of them, they would fit into one of these eight categories of the 59 one another's. This is what we're supposed to be. And so the question I ask is, what if relationships were more than just saying hi? What if they were more than that? What if it really was a matter of depth and emotional sharing and giving and openness and vulnerability and not just me being vulnerable so that you take all of my junk, but me being open to say, what have you got? How can I care for you? How can I love you? How can I respond instantly and say, okay, I'm going to pray about that, because that's probably a powerful thing that I can do for you. That's what it's called to be. That's what we're called to be. And I just want to share this to wrap up, because we looked at this last week as well. In Philippians chapter 3, here's the issue. What is more, and again, we looked at this last week, what is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them garbage that I might gain Christ and be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through faith in Christ. I'm not good because of me. I'm good because of Jesus. The righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faith. Paul goes on and says, I want to know Christ. Yes, to know the power of His resurrection and the participation in His sufferings, becoming like Him in His death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. This is the foundation of this series. Is that if we want church to be more, if we want relationships to be more, if we want things to be more, ultimately, our relationships are more when we want more of Jesus. He is the foundation. He is the key to all of this. So please don't walk away saying, yeah, I need to be friendlier to people. No, we need to be deep with one another so that we can share of Christ, share with Christ, share through Christ with one another in our relationships. And again, last week I mentioned this, and Kara already mentioned about the YouVersion plan for Crazy Love. This book, if you haven't read it, and maybe you have read it, and it was a while ago, this is the book, as I shared last week, that kind of got my guts going. It got my heart pumping and my blood flowing, going, what if church was more? That kind of began what MC3 is today. This is way before 5 years ago. And as elders, we are reading this together, and just in our meeting on Monday, or on Tuesday night, like, it's changing us. And I said in our prayer time, like, if that's it, that's fine. I don't mind the leaders of MC3 falling more passionately in love with Jesus. I'm cool with that. But I would love to see all of us falling more passionately in love with Jesus. And this is a challenging and a good book, but it is the foundation for what we do. Everything else does not matter compared to the surpassing worth, meaning above and beyond, of knowing Christ Jesus. That's what matters. And so I encourage you to read this book. We actually have audio copies in the lobby there on the shelf. And then also the YouVersion plan. It's only a 7-day plan. We'd love to see everybody at MC3 run through this plan. Take your time on it, but go through this plan over the course of this month. Just to develop that attitude, that heart that says it's all about knowing Jesus. And that's where the foundation is. That's the depth of everything. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for these people in this room. And I thank you that I'm not just speaking to a crowd that doesn't get it. I'm speaking to a crowd that lives it when it comes to that depth of relationship. And I just pray that you would remind us of the importance of that. For those of us that have been kind of on the fringes or maybe fully involved in, say, a prime group, but not actually giving of ourselves, opening up ourselves, I pray that you would help us to do that. So that we can have the depth of relationships that you've called us to as the church. So that we can be the one another's that we need to be. To become more like you. And I pray, God, that you would help us to know you more deeply because of each other, because of our relationships. Help us to be the church that you have called us to be. Not what we think church should be, but what you want church to be. It's in your name I pray. Amen.